love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nimco.
A number of people still aren't exactly experts on the computer. One person said, I still prefer a typewriter. Another one said, I'm not quite sure how to work the computer. Another said, I'm scared to death of the thing, like it was the thing, the monster. If you or someone you love is someone who gets that deer in the headlights look when facing a computer, but feel you really do need to be shepherded, if only kicking and screaming, as a late arrival into today's very computer-centric world, this segment may be for you. This segment will be informed not only by my own experience, but by a great book. It's called Is This Thing On? A Computer Handbook for Late Bloomers, Technophobes, and the Kicking and Screaming. I haven't read the book, but my wife, the Napa County Superintendent of Schools, member of the State Superintendent of Schools Technology Committee, but who's not a natural techie and therefore is in a perfect position to help those of us who are not geeky by nature become a little less geek fearful. Dr. Barbara Nimco, welcome.
Thank you. Good morning.
Hi. So let's get right into it. I'm going to ask some very basic questions from start to finish. I mean, the first thing that people have to figure out is, how do I buy one of these things? Do I buy a Mac versus a PC? Do I buy it online? Do I go to a store? What should, if I am a computer idiot, what do I need to know to buy a computer in an intelligent way that's going to not make things complicated?
Well, when you think about it, people tend to walk into a computer store and look around and make a selection. That's not how we buy a car. If you're thinking about buying a car, you do some research first. You don't just go to the dealer and pick a cute red one and say that. And so that's what she says. And what I love about this book is it feels like it's your very sweet daughter who's going to hold your hand and walk you through this all. You don't feel so alone, and she doesn't make you feel stupid. So she says, okay, first think about who you are. How are you going to use it? What's your space like? Do you want a desktop? You want a laptop? Do you need a lot of memory? Do you want a laptop that...
How do you know if you need a lot of memory?
So you can see it.
I know I could use more memory myself, but I mean, how do you know you need, 4 megabytes of RAM, 6 gigabytes of RAM? What the hell is RAM? I mean, let's get real basic here. I suspect that there's a lot of people who don't know RAM from DRAM, from all of that stuff, and how much you need is a whole other problem.
And she tells you that. I mean, she's got very specific things that you need to consider. But before you worry about your RAM, which honestly, most of the people who are in this category are not going to need a whole lot of that. What they do need to consider is, how's their eyesight? Do you need, because if you buy a laptop, which you're buying for convenience to carry it around, then it's got a smaller screen. If you buy a desktop, you can't move it, but you'll be able to see it.
Okay, I'm gonna give you Marty. I'm not like the daughter. I'm not whatever, but I'm gonna be like the super idiot. If I knew nothing about computers, I'd do the very simplest thing of all. I would either go to the Mac store because I hear Macs are easier. I go to the Mac store. I say I'm a computer idiot. I'm going to use it for word processing and spreadsheets and emailing my kids or whatever. And I don't really move it around a lot. Sell me a computer, and that's it. And let them do the thing. Is that wrong?
You know, actually, you can do that. But probably what you really want to do is talk to someone, whether it's your kid, your grandkid, your next-door neighbor, somebody who is good with computers, who's going to be able to help you. Because no matter what you learn at the store, you're still going to be the one who's dealing with it at home. So you want to take that into account. And the people in the store, they're all very young, and they're not worried about whether you can – they're not thinking about things like how do you see and what size do you need. Now, in terms of Macs and PCs, at one time, People bought Macs because they thought they were way more user-friendly.
Mm-hmm.
But really, they've come out with the new software on PCs. They're equally or almost equally user-friendly. And in fact, in terms of ratio, it's like 8-to-1 in terms of people who use PCs versus people who use Macs.
I know, I got to tell you that, but you know, I don't know, for whatever reason, I've started using computers in 82, and I just, because it was much cheaper then, the gap between the Apple and Mac price was ridiculous, the Apple and PC price was ridiculous, so I bought a PC, a Compaq. Even to this day, and I'm not computer phobic at all, that Windows operations system, that is, you know, the PCs, they crash unexpectedly. Things crash. And I don't hear that happening as much with Mac. So I got to tell you that if I was starting out as a computer virgin, I would go Mac. I would take a friend who knew me well, who was maybe not as computer intimidated as I was, and I would go to that Apple store, and I would find somebody who looked like the go-to guy or go-to girl in that particular store. Or I would really do. I would call the Apple store, and I would say, I'm scared to death. I don't know how to buy a computer worth squat. Who is your go-to guy or go-to girl in that space? I'd like to make an appointment to see that person when he or she is on duty. Does that make sense?
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. So now I've got this thing at my house. And, of course, if I'm a computer-phobic guy, I'm not going to try to set it up myself. I'll pay the extra $100 and whatever to have somebody come over. And if I had a previous computer to go and port over all from my old computer, put all the data that was and the programs that were on my old computer, bring on the new one. But now, how do I connect to the internet? Let's go with basic stuff. I got this computer there. Is that something that the person who's going to come over and set me up is going to do?
Interestingly, she gives you step-by-step instructions for how to take it out of the box and how to connect it. Mm. However, knowing what computer phobic people are like and
pay the guy.
Thinking about older people trying to do this, I would say hire a kid
pay
to
the
install
guy.
It for you.
Usually, knowing
how to install computers and where to stick wires.
You know, when you buy the computer, they know it's a profit center to have somebody come and set it up. Just, you know, pay that extra $150. Have the Apple dude or the Dell person come over, set it up. They'll set you up to the internet. Don't make yourself crazy. They'll also give you a half hour of free training to show you how to do basic email or whatever. I think you just keep things very simple. You don't add a lot of extra software. You know, you order your computer with the Microsoft Office suite on it, with, you know, Outlook, which is the word processing program, and Microsoft Word, which is the word program, and Excel, which is the spreadsheet, and then give it a break. Then just learn how to go to Google so you can search and keep your life simple. The more extra stuff you add on, the more the chances are there's going to be a conflict, meaning that one program will conflict with another. If you use just the basic stuff on there, your life is going to be simpler. Does that make any sense?
Absolutely. I'm thinking somebody who's actually listening to this, who doesn't have a computer at this point in time, probably doesn't even need an Excel spreadsheet. They probably want to email with their kids and their grandkids, to be able to get pictures from their grandkids.
Hold on. This show's about work. We're not talking about emailing your pictures to your grandkids.
If they're working and they're not using a computer, I can't imagine what job they have today, because everybody's using a computer at work.
Well, I think that a lot of people may be using a computer at work or using it as little as they can get away with. Seriously. There are a lot of people who still, and they're not necessarily older. There are some people who are just not. Technology scares them. They stay. They're artists. They're musicians. They're people. They just think the computer is this monster, and so, you know, or they bought a computer a million years ago. It's gathering dust. They're not using it because it's too slow. It's incompatible. So they got to start and they got to get a new. Right now, Windows 8 or Windows 7. Windows 8 is the new version of the operating system for PCs. And, you know, the Mac, of course, is really, people really do love their Macs. They really do. So, you know, there are a lot of.
I love my iPad.
Right. So there's a lot of people who are at work who do need to, we do a lot of shows on Work with Marty Nemco, which are for, you know, are very advanced stuff. But this is not an attempt to show how smart Marty Nemco is or advanced, but it's more, let's do one show that kind of takes us back to real basics. So I want to talk mainly in the rest of our conversation, Barb, about the real basic use of computers for in the work situation or your work at home?
Okay, if you're working in an office, there are people there usually, unless you're in the tiniest of offices, who can help you. In fact, usually they will have certain rules about it. In our office, we made the determination a long time ago to use PCs and not Macs. Mm-hmm. So when we purchase a computer for anybody in the office, it is a PC.
Yeah. And, of course, psychologically, in the workplace, because especially if you're older, the last thing you want to be seen is obsolete and out of touch. You're already scared enough about being old. So it's very dangerous, really, to ask coworkers too many basic questions about computers, because they may indeed think of you, you know, as obsolete, a dinosaur. So what I would encourage people to do in the workplace is to hire somebody who's available by phone or email to ask those questions. Yes, if you have a trusted friend who's not going to betray you and not going to talk tales behind, you know, tales out of school, you know that she doesn't know how to cut and paste a Microsoft Word. No, you don't want that. That's too risky. Better to spend a little money, and that can be a kid, or somebody, anybody with a good, patient heart who explains things clearly, not a geek. Geeks are so, all their understanding of computers is so intuitive, so in-depth, that they can never explain things clearly enough. Find some kind, gentle person who's computer competent, but not a computer geek, and hire that person to be your little intelligent computer brain that's always at your disposal by email and phone. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And there are all kinds of groups at senior centers. They have kids who come in. We send some of our Corton Community School kids to the senior center one day a month to help older people learn how to use all of this amazing array of technology, their smartphones, their iPads, their iPods. So that's in your community. There probably is a place where young people or even kids at a technology high school have they hire out to come to your house and help you with that.
You're listening to Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko. We're talking about being a computer idiot and how to move a baby step forward from that to at least computer competent enough so that you don't lose your job. We are part of the basis on which we're having this discussion, we meaning Dr. Barbara Nemko, my wife and I, is a great book called Is This Thing On? A Computer Handbook for Late Bloomers, Technophobes, and the Kicking and Screaming. What I'd like to do for the fun of it is I'd like to give a one-minute mini-lecture on a few of the basics of using computers, and please feel free to jump in, all right?
Okay.
Now, everybody knows what Google is, and then it's the search engine, but just for what it's worth, I think we underestimate Google because it's so available and it's free and it's right there. There is no more potent window to the world of knowledge than Google. It really does enable you to do what 50 years ago would have been thought as science fiction, which is any question, anything you want to learn about, you just put terms into this little box in Google, and voila, in 1 second, you're getting results that are usually on topic. And you must, in my judgment, when you do that, pay due homage to the first few results that come out, because the first few results aren't there at random. Google, one of Google's great things is that it has an algorithm which puts the search results first that have the most links to it, the most uses of the search term. So it is amazing how often those very first few search results can be of value. So there's a temptation to get overwhelmed by Google results, but you can cut it down to size by looking at just the first few results. Also, it's worth there is to learn how to put the right search terms in. It's beyond the scope of this show. But there is a little simple tutorial when you go to Google.com to teach you the basics of how to enter the right terms. And, for example, the most obvious little trick is when I am looking for the words Marty Nemko, I don't just put Marty Nemko in, because Google is then going to search for every use of the word Marty and the separate use of the word Nemko, which happens to be a, believe it or not, a specification for some technology. But if I wanted to look only for the phrase Marty Nemko, I use a quotation mark and then the word Marty Nemko and a closed quotation mark so that Google knows to look for Marty Nemko. And one other of that example of that is, let's say, for example, I want to know about Marty Nemko, but only as, but not anything that has to do with radio. So I would put quotation marks, Marty Nemco, close quotation marks, a minus sign, and the word radio. And then that way, all the Google search results will show the use of other instances of Marty Nemco having nothing to do with radio. So that's a quick little discussion. You want to respond to that at all, or should I go on to word processing?
Well, honestly, I rarely put quotation marks when I do a Google search, and I never have trouble. In fact, I just put your name in, no quotation marks. The first thing that came up was career advice, education advice, life advice by Marty Nemco.
I understand. But more, you know, not everything is easy, because my name is unusual, so it comes up easily. But if there are common words,
yes,
putting things.
Yeah. You might want to put more than Susie Smith in there.
Yeah. By the way, I just got a great tip from my engineer, Joanne Marr. When you buy a Mac, you can get weekly in-store tutorials for a year for a total of $99. Gold. Love it. Okay. Email. Now let's talk about word processing. You know, word processing is a miracle. It really, we don't realize anymore, most of us don't realize how much time it saves. Simply, the ability to cut and paste a paragraph and move it somewhere else, or a word, is gold. For any of you who are, again, beginners, one tip on how to go and cut and paste, it's really simple. You take your cursor, you take your mouse, and you shade the portion that you want to move. And then you simply click it, and then you move the cursor to where you want to move it, and then you press, for some crazy reason, you shade it, Control-C for copy, and then you move it to where you want, the cursor to where you want it, and then you press Control-V, which inserts it. It's the simplest thing in the world. It takes a second.
I have an easier way.
Please, go ahead.
You go to Edit in the toolbar. You highlight the part that you want to move, and there's one part that says Copy. You click Copy. Then you put your cursor where you want it to go, and you click Paste.
Okay. Moving on. Next. One of the things that it is said that America, that human beings are tribal, that they're social. Indeed, that's the basis on which Facebook exists and LinkedIn. One of the things that people like to do is hook up for an intellectual discussion about their particular field. That's a way to stay current. It's a way to network to help you get a job. I have this colleague who has really made her career. I don't know if she wants her name mentioned, but so I'm not going to. She has made her career by being very actively involved in these online discussion groups. And she, every time she comes up with a good article she's read, she shares it with the discussion group. Every time she has a good piece of advice, she shares it. And she's gotten three jobs. She's gotten fired from a couple, I believe, but ended up with a fabulous job, really, it largely because she's joined these online discussion groups. And there were, does this book that you read, Is This Thing On? A Computer Handbook for Late Bloomers, does it talk about how to discover online communities?
I didn't see anything that specifically dealt with discovering online communities, but I'm going to take a wild guess that if you Google the topic of it, you're going to come upon online communities.
Sure. How about LinkedIn? LinkedIn has millions of these online discussion groups and your professional association. Whatever your field is, whether you're a carpenter or you're a cardiologist, there are discussion groups, or a lawyer. You know, at the American Bar Association, they have these things called special interest groups. In everything from lemon law to estate law, there are discussion groups among with people who are passionate practitioners of their field who are involved. And you join those online discussion groups and you can become a party to, you know, learn so much and maybe help your career. Also, I'm a huge fan of meetups. Indeed, the Obama administration has been brilliant in its use. Everybody agrees, left and right, how good they are in using technology and the power of social media. And one of the things they do is meetups. They try to organize by having local community, both online and in-person meetings. You go to meetup.org and you will find anything from Dalmatian dog walking groups to American Socialist Workers Party local meetings, and of course on the right as well. So those are some really fabulous, powerful, easy ways to use computers, whether you're a computer idiot or you're a computer geek. Okay, I want to ask you an open-ended question. You've looked at a lot of this book. Pick a topic, any topic. What's something? Oh, a listener called in and asked. I used a fancy word. Guilty as charged. It's called algorithm. And I said that Google uses an algorithm that is that helps really make the most relevant results of your search come to the top of the search results. Algorithm is a very technical term. It's really a series of factors that each get a different weight in predicting where a search result should come. So the IRS, for example, they use something called the discriminant function, which is an algorithm, which predicts how likely you are to be a tax cheat. They look at your return. They look at the size of a certain deduction relative to your income. They compare to the previous year. There's all kinds of things. They have these factors that are each weighted based on how predictive they are. These are an algorithm is a predictive formula that predicts anything, but Google has one that predicts how relevant a particular search result is if you search, for example, on the term career advice or anything else. So thank you for that call. Barb?
Well, yeah, I was just thinking, you said as an example, if you wanted to join the Dalmatian dog walking group.
Mm-hmm.
So just for fun, I put Dalmatian dog walking groups, Bay Area, mm-hmm. into Google.
Mm-hmm.
And I found dog walking clubs, mm-hmm. San Francisco Bay Area Dalmatians, dogs mm-hmm. and puppies for sale, mm-hmm. Bay Area dog walking clubs. There's a club in Oakland that has off-leash excursions called Woof Walks. So you'll find all kinds of things that you didn't even know you were looking
There's
for.
There's a good example. If you put more of that, if you use some of the more advanced search tools, you probably see you didn't really find a Dalmatian dog walking group. You found something, sure. things that were close. And so that's why I'm encouraging you, you know, if you're a beginner, to go to Google.com and spend 20 minutes, that's all it takes, to look at the advanced, you know, the search terms to teach you how to use Google. Today, in my mind, as critical, maybe even more critical than knowing algebra, is knowing how to search Google well. Yes, anybody can search Google with not very precise search terms, but you will get more accurate information more quickly at the top of search results by learning how to use Google well. Okay. Okay. Tell me something else I want to open-ended. Tell me more about something that you learned that you think our listeners would profit from this book in helping them with their career as they use computers.
Well, it has there's so much in here. There is a list of 200 great websites, for example.
Okay.
They tell you how to use Skype. They tell you how to use Facebook.
Okay, let's start with Skype. Let's start with Skype and then Facebook. Tell me explain in plain English terms, what is Skype? How can it be useful in your career? And then tell me about Facebook. We all know how it's useful in showing pictures of your social life, but how could it be useful in your career?
Well, Skype is what we used to talk about as what the future would be, where we could talk to each other on the telephone and see each other. Skype is the ability to call someone, amazingly, at no cost, anywhere in the world, and talk with them on your computer while seeing them, or on your smartphone, or on your iPad.
And it's all you need to do to get it on your computer. It's a no-brainer. You, if you want, you can just Google, or you just go, you know, there's something called a browser. A browser is what enables you to search the internet. Yes, you can do it indirectly with Google, but there are the three major browsers that are they're pieces of software that come on nearly every computer, or you can get it for free. One is Firefox, which is the one I use mainly, Firefox.com, Chrome.com, or Internet Explorer. I'm not even mentioning Explorer because it sucks. It's bad. So Firefox.com and Chrome.com are ways for you to search the internet. And when you open this program called, say, Firefox, in the top there is a space, and you can type in Skype.com in the space, and that'll take you to the Skype website. And then in big bold letters, it'll say download Skype. Just push the button and it will download it to your computer. And then on the bottom of the screen, it'll say Skype.exe. That means that .exe means it's a file that can be a program that can be started. You click on that, and that will install Skype on your computer, and that's all you need to do to make video calls to anyone. It's amazing for meetings. Businesses are canceling their flights all across the country to use Skype and its similar competitors called GoToMeeting to have meetings on video meetings on the internet at your desktop. It's fabulous. Sometimes there is a need for in-person meetings, but sometimes there isn't. Tell us about Facebook.
Well, let me tell you another thing that you can use Skype for that's really fun.
Sure.
We were going to listen to a teacher demonstrate how he was using a particular tech book, not a textbook, but a tech book, talking to his staff. Well, there was somebody who wanted to be at that meeting but was in another part of the world at that time. We Skyped in.
Exactly, of course.
Up Skype, I turned my iPad around so it was facing the presentation, and you can watch the presentation. You can watch a classroom from somewhere else by just having somebody set up Skype in the classroom, and you can be wherever you are and see the teacher's lesson. You could do a teacher observation. You could observe a child. You could do anything that you wanted to for free from wherever you happen to be.
One more example of how Skype is completely disruptive of to conventional practice. Every psychologist, every career counselor, including me, every music teacher can now teach students anywhere in the world with video. If I were going to give a piano lesson, I could have a student in Azerbaijan and listen to them. And it's in very, you can listen in very high fidelity. As good as your computer speakers are, it can sound like life. I mean, it's fabulous. My Klipsch, they only cost me $100. These Klipsch computer speakers are fantastic. They make even piano, which is very difficult to reproduce well, sound fabulous. I could give a piano lesson to somebody in Azerbaijan and hear them crystal clarity, watch their fingers, watch their technique, watch how they're using their bodies. So Skype has completely reinvented the way in which work can take place in so many contexts. Talk about Facebook. How can you use Facebook not just to show your wet t-shirt contest, but to help your career?
Well, actually, I think before we do that, more importantly, is how not to use Facebook so it won't hurt your career. A lot of young people don't realize today that once you've posted something on Facebook, it's there forever. And one of the things that a lot of employers do now is they will check your Facebook page.
Oh, absolutely.
So you don't want to post your wet t-shirt pictures because this could cost you a job.
Yeah, you can set your privacy. There was a law case that recently came out that, you have a setting in Facebook where you can make things private so that employers cannot look. And there were many employers who were, as a condition of applying for a job, they say, do you give me permission to become one of the private people who access it? And a court ruled that unconstitutional or at least illegal. So, if you want to protect your privacy and you still want to play around, you can, and show the weird things, your heavy metal side. But you make sure your privacy settings don't allow everybody to see it. And indeed, I'm not a lawyer, but if my memory serves, as I read the research, read the case that came down, that employers are not allowed to ask to see your private Facebook. Okay. It sounds like you would like me to answer the Facebook question using Career. Do you want to take it?
Well, you probably have more. I don't use it for much of anything.
I don't use it either. Now, I have written before in my predictions for 2013 that I wrote for AOL. I said that I believe that Facebook is peaking, and I still believe that is true. But that said, it is not dead yet. It is certainly a very alive and well. I really think that Facebook can be used to announce anything that is important in your work life as well as personal life. So the way I personally use it is every time I write I have a weekly column at AOL and a weekly column at US News. Every time it comes out, I do post a link to that column on my Facebook so that my friends can read it. I also don't accept everybody as either my Facebook or LinkedIn friends. I want when people look at my list of connections, that they reflect on me. If it's somebody I don't know and who could be a sleazebag or somebody who I just otherwise don't want to be associated with, I don't. Like so many people, they accept as many Facebook invitations as possible. They try to get as big a list as possible. No, because the people on that list end up being a reflection of who you are. So I invite you to be quite judicious about who you allow to be your LinkedIn connections and who you allow to be your Facebook connections.
And in addition, the more Facebook friends you have, the more people are going to be sending you email announcing things on their Facebook page.
Exactly.
You have 500 Facebook friends, and they're all doing what you're doing, which is every time you write an article, sending a link that you wrote an article, your email is going to be totally out of control.
Okay.
And now, then what happens is you just delete everything.
You're listening to The Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. We're talking about basics of technology. We are, you know, there's always a risk when you get basic. There's going to be some listeners who are going to say, gee, it's so condescending and talking down to us. Well, you know, I'd rather incur some of that than ignore the large numbers of people who, even in 2013, are not computer geeks and are too embarrassed to admit it. And so my job here is to help the listeners of KALW the full range. And so I'm willing to take the heat for being too elementary. We are being elementary about computer stuff. I'm talking with my wife, Dr. Barbara Nemco. We're sharing our knowledge about the basics of career, informed in part by the book, Is This Thing On? A Computer Handbook for Late Bloomers, Technophobes, and the Kicking and Screaming. You said that the book...
We skipped going over how you send an attachment via email.
Okay.
Which is something that lots of people need to know how to do.
Okay.
What I think is so clever about it, if I were going to send you an attachment by snail mail, I would take a paper clip and I would attach it to my letter and then I put it in an envelope. Well, email is very similar. There is a picture of a paper clip. You click on the paper clip.
That's in your word processing program. That's an Outlook Express or Outlook or whatever your email program. There's a separate program for email, like whether it be, as I said, Outlook or Outlook Express. Some people use others. Go ahead.
And then all you have to do is locate what it is you want to send, whether it's a report or a letter that you wrote to someone. If I write a letter of recommendation to someone, I can just click on the paper clip and then find the letter, and then it says insert. I insert it, and then I send the email, and it's gone as though I was handing it to
them. But you said there was one thing you glossed over. You said you just find it. We need to talk about this. This is the hardest part about computers. How do you find this item you want to insert?
Well, actually, that's the hardest part of life. It's how do you organize all of the stuff
on your computer?
And organizing on a computer is similar to organizing in the old days when you put things in folders and you put them in drawers alphabetically.
Mm-hmm.
The hardest thing is trying to remember what you filed it under.
Here is the secret. There is, if you are, I don't know, I'm not a Mac user, but if you are using a PC, and a PC could be anything, a Dell computer, an HP, a Sony, a Samsung, anything other than an Apple. When you, on the lower left side, there is the Microsoft Windows symbol. It's a colorful circle of some sort. And you click on that. In the lower left-hand corner, there is a search, is a space for search. It searches your entire computer. So all you need to do is put in the search term that is most idiosyncratic to that file, that article, that whatever it is that you want to attach. And then it will find it for you, and then you know the address where on the computer that is located, and then you just copy and paste that into the attach, what you're trying to attach. That's critical and very important. Okay. Anyway, you know what I think we should do, Barbara? Is it time? I think we should go to the phones. What do you think?
Absolutely.
Okay.
There's just one other thing that we didn't talk about is Twitter. And honestly, my personal feeling is if you're new to computers, Twitter is probably the last thing you need. I know people love it.
I love the whole business
of only having, 140 characters.
I love it. Go ahead.
Whenever I look at somebody's tweets, I keep thinking, why?
All right.
But maybe it's something that I know you use it.
Constantly.
I know lots of people use it.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking if you're just starting out with computers, that'd be the last thing on the list that I would worry about learning.
I'm going to make the case for it in a minute, but let's go out the phone number. If you are you or someone you love is got the stupidest question in the world about computers that you normally would be afraid to ask, this is a safe space to do that. That's what this particular show is about. I invite you to call with your computer question. And, you know, it could be basic or even not so basic. Between the two of us, we should have an answer for you. The phone number here at work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Twitter. Here is why I love Twitter. First of all, you can go to twitter.com and it's free. Again, it's real easy. But of course, if you write silly, idiotic stuff, it's going to be silly and idiotic. But you develop an online reputation. I use a very stringent criterion for what 140-word ideas...
Character, not word.
Excuse me, thank you. 140 characters, message I give. It's only when I have a powerful and not obvious piece of information or advice that I can present in 140 words, or you, or a link to one of my articles that I think my readers would want, I do that. And that's how I've developed, starting from zero. I now have 770 followers who simply, you know, they want to see what I have to say because I take my readers' time very seriously. Not only does that help them, not only if I was in the mode where I needed to disseminate information for marketing purposes or whatever, but it enables me to archive all of my best ideas in one easy place so that I can, for example, on this show, when I have a no-guest show, I print out my most recent tweets so I have a nice archive of my best fresh ideas. In addition, you get to see the latest thinking. You don't just contribute your own stuff. I can follow, for example, I was listening to Philosophy Talk, the show that precedes this, and they were talking about Steven Pinker and Jonathan Haidt was the guest. These are two really smart, great people. They have Twitter presence. I can go and follow them and read their tweets all for free, their most concise 140-character statements. I think Twitter is gold. Let's go to the phones. Although we have lots of lines lighted up here. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. What's on your mind?
Hello.
It's you. Hi.
Can you hear me?
I sure can.
Oh, great. Thank you. I wanted to make a recommendation. You were talking earlier about easy computers to use.
Yeah.
You might want to recommend Chrome notebooks to your listeners.
Great.
They're super, super inexpensive, and you never have to be a systems administrator. You never have to make any changes to your computer. Google takes care of it for you.
Love it.
Another option is Linux. There are groups all over, especially the Bay Area, of people who will help you for free. If your computer is slow, don't throw it out. Don't buy a new one. Just Google Linux in Bay Area, and there's group meetings you can go to. They'll install a brand new operating system on your computer. And if you have any questions, you can always take your computer to this group, and they'll help you fix it.
I love it. Chrome notebooks are $299. They're real cheap. Everything is built right in. And the only question is for some people, and oh yeah, you know, I don't know for sure, but I think you can. There is a port that is basically a plug where you can, if you want a bigger monitor, let's say you don't want that 12 inch little monitor, you want a really nice big monitor, you can simply plug one in. And so that when you're at home, you can use the big monitor. You can also plug in, if you don't like the small keyboard that exists on a Chrome notebook, you can plug in a full size keyboard. Is that correct?
Yes.
Exactly. So, and it's $299. It's like, great. I love your call. Thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you.
Yeah, let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. What's on your mind?
Hello?
Hi.
Hi.
It's you.
Oh, me?
Yes, it's you.
I just wanted to say that I've said this before once, but Jewish Vocational Services?
Yeah.
They have really great help with learning about computers and
And they have a computer lab where you can do, like, tutorials on your own, but then they have workshops, like how to make LinkedIn work for you in terms of looking for a job, or workshops on Excel and PowerPoint, and it's all free.
Yeah, you know, I really love the equality. It makes me kind of proud to be, I'm an atheist, but, you know, I see that, you know, Jewish Vocational Services, for example, is open to everybody. In fact, they really encourage everybody. You know, I've not seen other groups that have organizations that are identified by their ethnicity or race or whatever be as so outreaching to other communities. It makes one proud to be Jewish. Jewish Vocational Services is awesome. So I really appreciate your call.
Okay, great.
Great. Bye. Thank you. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko. What's on your mind?
Hi, is that me?
Yep.
Hi. So a couple of things. First of all, you had said the thing that I've noticed the most in working with people who are really don't know anything about computers. I'm an editor, and sometimes I work with writers who are really unfamiliar with computers.
Right.
So one of the things is people, a lot of people who don't know computers think it's like a toaster that you just plug it in and it works. And it's not, because every piece of software that you use, especially on Windows, is always upgrading itself.
Yeah.
And it changes, and it changes the way it looks. And it's like if you got into your car and turn on the ignition, it says, "Welcome to the upgrade. Your accelerator is now on the other side."
Does it really? That I mean, I see those updates all the time. That really does. They don't change to a different look and feel. They do.
Sorry, Marty. Especially on things like I can't even use Word anymore because they've changed it so much.
Huh.
So I think sometimes they do.
But that's not an automatic upgrade. I mean, I've been using Word 2003 for a long time because I see the upgrade of Word 2010 is, you know, unless you're totally mobile, it's useless. So I don't want to invoke fear unnecessarily. I think most programs that have the automatic updating are more like to increase the security.
Well, that's true. Yes, that's true. But I don't want to get into a long thing about it.
Right.
So it's great that you can use an older version of Word, and you can still work with other people, and it's great. Sometimes people need to upgrade to the next higher version, and those do change. So what I was going to suggest is that if someone's not really familiar with computers, that you don't just need someone to help you set it up the first time. You need to have someone on call that you can call who can come over and help you with stuff. The second thing I wanted to say is the use of Google, which is what the computer geeks do, which is you can actually type in a question into the Google box. I did it the other day. How do I send blind, you know, BCCs to multiple people using Gmail? And it went, the first link that was on there was a user forum, and the second answer on that answered my question.
I got it. There's no downside there is a little bit of a downside in adding extra words. So
yes.
What I think it is wiser to, you don't need to ask it in a form of a question. You can simply say, BCC multiple users how? And you'll be more likely, this one worked for you, I know, I'm glad it did.
It didn't just work for me once, it's worked for me a lot.
Okay.
And it's what the geek guy that comes and helps me with the computer always does when he comes over and I ask him how to do something. So it's just an alternate way to do it. So
okay.
I'm grateful for what you're saying, and you have good advice for people. I just wanted to add a couple of comments.
Thank you very much for the call.
Okay, take care.
You too. Let's go back to the phones.
I agree with her before you get to the next phone call. I know we're about to switch to, I think it's Office 365, and I'm told that will radically change everything that we're doing because we're doing it in the department of the time.
Yeah, I know. Right.
And people have told me that everything is not where you thought it was. It's moved. And
right.
So it's a steep learning curve.
So that's what I want to make the distinction. She was talking about the automatic updates. Automatic updates is as long as your computer is on. For example, Microsoft Word, Microsoft, the corporation, will ongoing automatically upgrade each piece of software, but it's mainly for security. If you're changing to a new version, a completely, like from, you know, Microsoft Office to something else, or Windows 7 to Windows 8, those are choices you make on your own. You got to buy it and pay for it. And there, your point is extremely important. Very often, you know, the American way is to buy the newest, the latest, the greatest. But there is a huge cost that gets incurred when you do that. I do urge people to, when you have something that's worked in the computer space, unless there is a pressing, crying need to upgrade to a different version, don't. Yes, for example, if you're running a business and you're wanting a system to track your customers, etc., sure, and do it by email, sure, use something like Constant Comment, or if you're more sophisticated, Salesforce. But don't just upgrade to a new look and feel because Microsoft or any other corporation wants to sell it to you. Don't necessarily buy literally and figuratively the American way.
I agree with all of that, but remember we are talking about, you said, people in the workplace.
Yep.
And sometimes
yep.
your workplace has
yep.
made the decision to do that. You don't have a choice.
Well,
if you're going to be wanting to practice it at home, that's where her point was, you should have someone who can come over and help you. You do need to learn it, and maybe you don't want to be learning it while you're at work.
Of course.
Because you don't want to look stupid while you're there.
But part of my message is not just to the beginners, who are the main focus of this conversation, but there are plenty of IT people who are listening to this, who are the decision makers for an office, to decide, should we upgrade, quote unquote? And they're, you know, one really needs to, you know, people who are IT people tend to be geeky. They like the latest, greatest, coolest features, whatever. But it's really important for an IT person, that decision maker, to weigh the net benefits and costs to the organization, human costs, fiscal costs, before deciding to go for the latest and greatest. I've heard a lot of problems, for example, about Windows 8. Windows 8 is the new operating system for PCs, and there's a lot of growing pains. That's another little tip for anybody. Don't, just like you don't normally want to be the first on your block to buy a totally redone model of car, because there are kinks that get worked out on the fly. They can't work all of them out in advance. They look at, over the first year of a car being out, they see the problems that occur. It's the same thing with software. A brand new version of Windows operating system, Windows 8, no matter how much beta testing they do, that's the fancy word for testing with the advanced users before they release it to the general public, there are problems that come up that they can only learn when it's exposed to millions of people. So I encourage you to keep your don't be the early adopter of some new software. Give it 6 months or a year, because there are those automatic updates that will be made to it that will end up improving it so that when you get it, it won't crash and it will be less likely to crash, etc. I'll give out the phone number one more time. If you or someone you love has got a computer related problem, especially related to work, we invite you to call, no matter how basic or even more advanced, we may be able to be of help. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Before we go back to the phones, Barb, you had mentioned, and we got off on a sidetrack, you had mentioned that that book, Is This Thing On? A Computer Handbook for Late Bloomers, Technophobes, and the Kicking and Screaming, had a list of 200 great websites. What is one or two that maybe is not so obvious, but that is gold?
Well, let's see. Here's one that I've used before. It's called replacements.com. Now, this is not a work site, but where you have dishes and silverware that is not made anymore and you lose one or you break one, this is where you can go and find those and get it replaced. If you're looking to find a person, 123people.com or people.yahoo.com or whitepages.com can help you locate someone that you haven't seen in a long time. Amtrak.com, very helpful if you want to do that. The rest of them are fairly obvious in terms of the ones that she listed. But she's got 200. Snopes.com, for all those emails that get that warn you about some horrific thing that happened or what somebody said, that can tell you whether it's true or not.
Yeah, Snopes.com is excellent for finding out about the extent to which a rumor is true. And they're more nuanced. They don't say true, false. They say here is where the preponderance of the evidence is. I love Snopes.com. Excellent. Okay, let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. What is on your mind?
Am I on?
Yes.
Great. So one of the things I heard you talk about was getting someone to come in and help you with your computer. And what I found is that if you use remote control software, TeamViewer.com has a free
right.
version, that if you allow someone to come in, so the first thing I do when I'm helping somebody, let's say my mother, is set up the remote control software so I can see her screen.
Exactly.
Right.
She sees it.
Right. Let me try to make that real clear for the listeners. So, you know, you can actually surrender control of your computer to somebody in a remote site so that not only can that person see everything on your entire computer on their website, but they can actually make changes to your computer remotely. It's gold. Teamviewer.com.
Great. And so a couple of nuances to that.
Good.
One is that means if you have a family member who's a good teacher and computer literate, they don't have to be next to you.
Right. Good point.
They can be anywhere. The other side of that is that in addition to having remote, you know, how do I run the software, you do want to have somebody local you can take it to when it's a hardware problem. Mm-hmm. Just when you're remote, you know, fixing a motherboard or screen is really tough.
Right. Here's a question for you. You know, I have an aversion to, like, the big corporate ones, like the Geek Squad. They charge a fortune. They're really a ripoff. How does one find a good local techie who for $30 or $40 an hour, some reasonable amount of money, will either remotely or come to your place and check your computer stuff out?
I wish I had a good answer to that. I would say try Yelp. Mm-hmm. That's what I would do.
Yeah.
Basically, what you want is word of mouth for someone who's got a good reputation for both being good with people, but also being effective in their diagnosis skills and being frugal with your fixes.
All right, I have to give a plug to my guy. I do have a guy who, like, for example, my hard drive crashed all of a sudden, and of course that scared me. It scared me to death.
Right.
And I, there was a couple of guys I tried who both failed, and then I found Malcolm Lowe. Malcolm in Oakland, he's a private guy. He works out of his house. That's the kind of guy I like. You know, he's got about four computers at his house. No infrastructure, no BS. I'm dealing directly with him, and he's a relaxed guy. I really like relaxed guys. You know, he's not impatient, but very, very smart. Malcolm, Lowe. I recommend him highly. Okay, I want to thank you very much for the call. We've got lots of calls waiting, so let's do that. Barbara, is there anything you want to say before we go back to the phones?
Well, I'm still a big fan of calling your local high school or college and find out if there are students who can help you with your computer at home.
That's for the low-cost things. But, you know, I ended up spending $80 an hour or whatever it was on Malcolm Lowe, and, you know, he was so smart and so fast. He's been doing it for 30 years. The guy sometimes it's worth spending some money. And I knew there were a million things that had to get done in order to get that hard drive replaced and everything back on the computer. And Malcolm Lowe was an A-plus dude.
Oh, absolutely. For a crisis like that where your hard drive crashes, you want the absolute best. But I'm talking about when you want someone for some of the little things.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco, Barbara Nemco. What's on your mind?
Hi. Thanks. When people think about getting a computer for the first time, don't forget your back, because these can be addicting to sit down and work long hours.
Yes.
And so either you can have a setup where you can adjust the height of your work equipment, or if you don't have that, you might do what I did. Just use a small lightweight laptop, and you can move it around your home, you know, to different locations in your home where you can work from different positions. Because I never had back problems until I started using a computer, and so now I make myself move during the day. And
yes.
So that's been helping a lot.
Great. There's something called a sit-stand desk, which you can Google, and they're great. I was investigating it myself, but I have a beautiful oak desk, and I didn't want to replace it. I agree with you 1,000%. First of all, there's research that shows that if you're sitting more than about 8 hours a day, it's just not healthy for you, no matter what, even if you break it up, even if you exercise. So I make a point of looking for for example, I do a fair amount of reading. What I've done is I bought this, like, book reading stand. It's a simple little thing that basically holds a book in place upright so that you're not looking down on it. And every time I know I have to read something, whether it be from a magazine, not on a computer, I'm talking about just print stuff, I make a point of not reading it at my desk sitting, but I put it on the top of my file cabinet so I can stand and read it. That gets me out of my seat. So sometimes it's not a matter of necessarily doing computer stuff standing, although that's very helpful. but it can also be making sure that things that don't require your butt to be in a seat, that you don't necessarily do them while you're sitting.
I love it.
Anyway, and I love your call, too. Thank you very much for the call.
Thanks, Marty.
You know, that was a really good point, and I have to say this book devotes quite a bit of space to all the things that you need to consider ergonomically. She points out how often we put a computer on top of a desk, but a desk is not the ideal height for you to be tapping on a keyboard,
right,
and that you there are particular desks that are made for keyboards, or you can get something underneath the desk.
Right.
So that you're not putting your body at risk.
Two options there. One is the simplest option, which is the one I do. Actually, you know, most desks have a center drawer. I just put my keyboard in the center drawer, and I actually raise it a little bit on a piece of 2x4 wood so that it is exactly the ergonomically right height. And then I have a chair that is an adjustable height, and I make sure that my arms are roughly 90 degrees, you know, so they're not sticking up or down. And that's a free solution. There are also things called keyboard trays, which you do indeed attach to your keyboard. You're absolutely right. And it's important, yes, that your monitor be at where your eyes are looking straight ahead, not looking up, not looking down, and roughly 30 to 36 inches away from where you're sitting is approximately the right length. Also, there are easy software adjustments. Let's say your vision isn't as good as it was, you know, in Microsoft Office or whatever, you can automatically enlarge the size of the text from, normally it defaults set at 100%, but it can be 125%, 150%, 200%, so that you don't need to squint. You can adjust that. Those are the simple kind of ergonomic things that can avoid you having any kind of problems and increase your pleasure. By the way, there really are a monitor. Choosing a monitor is quite important. Fortunately, there are at least are wonderful monitors, inexpensive, available, for example, on Amazon. If you haven't bought it with your computer and you have an old monitor that isn't really high resolution, the monitors that come out of Samsung right now, and even fairly large screens or the HP monitors are really quite wonderful in the 20 and 22 and 24 inch size. So you can really, for under $200, get a wonderful, wonderful monitor, which I encourage you to do. Barbara, I want to give you the last word. We're just about out of time. You got a 30-second last tip or piece of advice about us, related to computers, especially for beginners.
Well, we didn't talk about flash drives, which are one of the most amazing things you can do. If you want to do a presentation and you want to take it from your computer and show it somewhere else, it's this cute little thing that you plug in your computer, you save your presentation on it, you take this thing which weighs like a quarter of an ounce, and you can plug it into any other computer, and there's your presentation wherever you're taking it on the road.
Yeah, it's amazing, and they cost under $10, and they hold 8 gigabytes of, you know, as a typical one holds 8 gigabytes, which is an enormous amount. It's just amazing, amazing,
and
amazing.
And they're cute, too. You can buy them in all kinds of colors and patterns.
What a
interests you, and it does me.
What a perfect way to end our segment and our show. Barbara Nemco, thanks so much, as usual, for being my co-conspirator here on Work with Marty Nemco.
Thank you. Thank you for all your good advice.
I do my best. Anyway, my thanks also to my board operator, Joanne Moore, and, of course, to all of you for listening and calling in. Please do join me again next Sunday at 11. We will radically change. Yes, I will do three-minute workovers on callers, but is the current California policy direction good for jobs? The director of the Center of the Continuing Study of the California Economy and top consultant to California government, Steve Levy, will debate Stanford Hoover Senior Fellow and National Review columnist Victor David Hansen. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemco for Barbara Nemco, reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.